Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It is great to have all of you on board today. Great in particular to have Sean Carey on board.
Pleasure's all mine, sir. Hope you're having a good one, too.
I am. Guess who's in town today? Yeah, I'm talking about in my town.
The suit.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness.
I didn't get a lot of notice. I should have gave you a heads up and make sure the at least the door to the Sunbury Motor Studio was
there. No, No. I made sure I was busy all day. All right, so. Got no time. Can't talk to you. Really busy.
Stop over and see it.
So. Yeah, he can stop by if he wants. I'm in an undisclosed location, but he can stop by. he's in town. So he I did ask him, does anybody refer to him yet as the suit? And he said to me, no, not yet. He says, but I'm sure they will, thanks to you. I said, well, I mean, I kind of thought that was a little sharp and biting. I was taken aback by the response.
He's getting edgy.
Well, as if he wasn't before. I mean, he roots for sports that are falling by the wayside, and America's going in a completely different direction than him. So, all right, we have a lot going on today, including Jerry Dulac. From the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, covers the Steelers and also covers golf, just covered the U.S. Open. He's going to be on with us at 4:06 today, so I'm really looking forward to that. We got a guest today at 3:35, right?
Yeah, we do. Dave Spadaro, Eagles Insider, PhiladelphiaEagles.com. So we got the Eagles covered, got the Steelers covered, we got golf covered, so we're rolling.
And we're going to have recruiting covered, Ryan Snyder. From Blue White Illustrated is going to join us today. We'll put Ryan on in the final half hour. It is NBA draft is tomorrow. Now, we will not have a show tomorrow because the Phillies are playing the Twins out of Target. What a beautiful ballpark that is. Gorgeous park. That's one of the better things that they've done out there is they got them out of that dome. I actually saw the Twins play a game in the dome. And it's comfortable, or it was. It doesn't exist, obviously, anymore. They put the new stadium. They tore that down. They put the new stadium there. But to put it outdoors, Minnesota is a beautiful place. And Minneapolis, a beautiful downtown. And they built that gorgeous park. It's right back of the Target Center where the T-Wolves play. And there's an area in back of the Target Center, the plaza that connects the Target Center with Target Field. And they have monuments out there to Harmon Killebrew and Rod Carew and so forth, and the history of the Twins through there. And it's a great place to sit down and enjoy, and then leads right into the right field grandstand. It's really well done, very, very nice. And the park is beautiful itself. And the Phillies are playing out there, and they'll play tomorrow afternoon. Thus, we will step aside to allow them to do that. And then we'll be back on Friday with a review of the NBA draft. The NBA draft is going to be, there's the Sixers will be a better team out of this when it's done by drafting Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is going into this draft, a cut above everybody else. Brandon Ingram would be next, and then there's another group behind those two. It is not really a debate between Brandon Ingram and Ben Simmons. It is, without question, Ben Simmons. Simmons brings skills to the table that the Sixers currently don't have on the roster. A man of that size who's an excellent distributor, a good shooter, a decent rebounder. He does fit in quite well in the fact that he's a mediocre defender. The one, if I had to pick one area that would be of high-level concern, is that for whatever reason, Simmons has felt a sense of entitlement throughout this entire process from Australia to here. You know, in high school, you know, I watched him play in high school. He played against Joe Hampton, as a matter of fact. Hampton played, or by the way, when Monteverdi played Oak Hill in Madison Square Garden 2 years ago, Simmons played an awesome game. The second best player on the court was Joe Hampton. And that really gave me encouragement for what I was watching for the future of Penn State basketball when I saw that. I thought, wow, I mean, Hampton is really good. And I thought that was a big plus. But Simmons has always had a sense of entitlement. Then he goes to LSU. And I know some people have said that, look, if there's one area where, you know, why didn't he showcase more? You know, LSU didn't make the NCAA tournament. They turned down an NIT. They said, well, that's because he didn't go to Kentucky. Okay. Maybe I can buy into that. Right? Maybe I can. But he had a film crew following him around 24/7. You see how he's conducted himself here in the offseason. Those are not things that endear yourself to a team or a fan base. Now, it seems like he's tried a little bit harder here in the last 10 days to be a little softer image-wise, where he's talked to the Sixers a little bit. Been more on board with what they're thinking, likes the idea of being the first overall pick in the draft, wants them to say straight out that he is. He's proud of it. That's why. And he should be. But that sense of entitlement is, something that has to be looked at. Now, it's not going to change how you pick. But he does bring a skill set to the table that the Sixers don't have. So, in other words, he is a missing part. He steps right in as a missing part. That really will help the Sixers. So the Sixers are going to be a better team by drafting him. There's no question about that. Brandon Ingram is, and not only that, but Simmons worked hard, by the way, in this pre-draft lead-up. He was told he needed to get more weight on him. Well, okay, so he's put 20 pounds of muscle on him. And I give him credit for that. You have to work to do that. Sean and I could put on 20 pounds, but we don't have to do any work to do it. doing it the right way takes work.
The other part, it's just so easy.
Yeah, I know, really easy. So then there's Ingram. Ingram tried to do the same thing. He put on 1 pound. Ingram did show in the pre-draft camps and the workouts that the three-point ability that we saw at Duke lines 3 feet further out from the wings to the top of the key in the NBA. That distance is no issue for him. The mystery is going to be at 3. What do the Celtics do? Because there is no clear-cut third pick in this draft. They have tried to change it. I mean, they've tried to trade it. and they can't find a trade partner that will give them a veteran. In other words, they looked at Chicago for Jimmy Butler. That didn't work. Butler would be a nice piece in what the Celtics are trying to do. No go there. I think everyone that follows the NBA draft has a pretty good handle on who the top 10 players are. It's just not. It's just what order they're going to be picked in. So that's not an issue as to who the top 10 are. There are several big names that are second-round picks. And there are other big names that are no picks. And I'll give you two guys that I don't think, the two guys that had really good college careers that to me don't have a chance at all in the NBA. Marcus Paige of North Carolina and Yogi Ferrell of Indiana. I don't see it. Neither one brings a skill set than an NBA team wants.
Oh, and you've seen a pile of tape of Yogi Ferrell for sure, and live in person too.
Yogi Ferrell is an excellent college player. Yogi Ferrell is an excellent player that will do well if he wants to go to Europe. Yogi Ferrell, if he wants to go to the D-League, will be a good player in the D-League. But I can't see him playing in the NBA. Because he's small, he does not bring enough to overcompensate for the lack of height that's going to help an NBA team. I don't see it. And Marcus Paige is an okay defender. He's not a great shooter. He's an okay passer. The area he's best in is transition. And that's not going to cut it in the league either. The fact that he's not a great shooter really is a crusher for him. It's one thing, at least Yogi Ferrell's a better shooter. But I don't see either one of those guys making it in the league. I don't. In fact, I don't see either one of those guys getting drafted tomorrow night. That's just me. The best passer in the draft? Probably Denzel Valentine. Now, Valentine's issues are twofold. Okay, plus side, huge basketball IQ. Two, not just a good passer, he's probably an elite passer. He will enter the league and probably be one of the top 5% passers in the league the second he gets in. So high IQ, elite passer. Good shooter, not a great shooter, but a good shooter. Decent rebounder. Okay, now the big negatives. Not a good defender. And cannot turn the corner. And if you can't turn the corner in college, you absolutely will never be allowed to turn the corner in the NBA. Buddy Hield. So, I mean, Valentine will be a first-round pick. Don't get me wrong, he'll be a first-round pick. I'm saying, but he'll be a first-round pick because of his basketball IQ and his passing ability. Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield, to me, is going to be a player that will end up in his NBA career halfway between J.J. Redick and Steph Curry. He'll be halfway between. He can flat-out shoot. I mentioned yesterday the Celtics drill. They put a clock up. They want you to get 100 shots off within the prescribed time. I can't remember how much the time is. He hit 85 out of 100. These are three-point shots. Somebody will select him. Now, what's the question on him as a shooter? There actually is a question on Buddy Hield as a shooter. And the question is this. In the NBA, will he be able to get his own shot? Diamond Stone, Maryland, first-round pick. Not a great defender, okay rebounder, good post-up offensive player. Biggest negative, immature. But he'll be a first-round pick. They don't grow him like that. Scalabissia, Kentucky. Hot shot coming out of high school. Did not have a great freshman year. And followed up that not-so-great freshman year by entering the NBA draft, which then put him into the NBA pre-draft camp and continued to play to a level that was not what people hoped to see. I think the team that selects him is just doing it on hope that he fulfills promise. Jamal Murray, his teammate at Kentucky, outstanding shooter. I think he'll be one of the top 10 picks in the draft. Outstanding shooter. Not a great defender. There will be some teams that will look at him and hope that he ends up being a good passer that they could play at point guard. But remember, he didn't play point guard at Kentucky. Taliulis played point guard at Kentucky. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Ford is so close to their goal of selling 101 new Fords in June. But time is running out.
The
only way to get there is for SMC to put the pedal to the metal and give you the best deal of any Ford dealer in a 100-mile radius. 101 vehicles sold means you'll save more money than ever before. SMC is where you want to be because new Fords are discounted to the lowest price possible. Plus, they'll give you more for your trade. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 45 new Escapes starting at $19,880. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 123 new Ford trucks with F-150 starting at $23,749. Stay over 11 grand. SMC is where you want to be if you want 0% financing for up to 60 months on Fusions, Edges, Escapes, Explorers, and F-150s. The June goal of 101 new Fords is within reach at Sunbury Motors Ford, but they know to get there, they have to put the pedal to the metal. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
You asked a really good question in the break on the draft.
Yeah, I mean, there's one player that I'm not hearing a lot of pub about is probably the top player I would think coming out of the Big East Conference would be Chris Dunn out of Providence.
Chris Dunn will be a first-round pick. He will be an immediate contributor in the draft. And the only problem, he has is shoulder problems. That is a problem, obviously. But Chris Dunn is easily the best defensive guard in this draft. And teams will value that very much. Troy Williams, Indiana. He'll be picked in the second round. I do not know why he opted for the NBA draft, but did. Troy Williams, in terms of being a great athlete, is a great athlete. So you want to see the run, the jump, the whole thing. He is a great athlete. But here's the problem. He's not a great shooter. He does not have a high basketball IQ. And to top it all off, he plays too fast. Troy, the ball is back there. You're up here. And you had the ball. He plays too fast. Big problem. A.J. Hammons, he'll be a second-round pick. I think A.J. Hammons will probably end up with multiple teams in his career. Just by circumstance, not by attitude. He has fine attitude. But he's 7 feet tall, and I think he's going to have himself a 10-year NBA career. He knows what he, you know, A.J. Hammons does not try to do things he can't do. He's actually a better face-up shooter than people realize. Robert Carter, I know Robert Carter of Maryland is going to be a second-round pick, but I have no idea why he entered the NBA draft. I know he'll be a second-round pick, but I don't see it. I'll tell you, a guy that's going to get an interesting long look by teams is Caris LeVert. Two-foot injury slowed him down at Michigan. I think those two-foot injuries kept him from being a top 20 pick in the NBA draft.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It's interesting. Sean, did I ever tell you about the National Governors Conference here in 2000?
Have not.
Governor Tom Ridge, they hosted the National Governors Conference here in 2000. And there was an event that took place at the Penn State Multisport Complex. And in fact, they brought Kenny Rogers in to perform at the event. And Governor Tom Ridge asked me to MC the event. You know, as the voice of Penn State football, he wanted me to do that. And I said, well, yeah, sure, of course I will. You know. So I went to the event, and all these governors are there. I would say probably 45 out of the 50 governors are there. And to start with, they had us all assigned to tables. And there were two governors at my table. Ronnie Musgrove from Mississippi. And the other governor that we had dinner with that night was Gary Johnson of New Mexico. And that's who Jennifer Wakeman's referring to, who's running for president. I'll just leave it at the fact that we had dinner. I'm not going to get into everything we talked about. But it just turned out they were. Actually, the most intriguing guy I met in the whole thing was Mike Huckabee. I thought he was actually kind of cool, but still. It was an interesting thing to be a part of back in 2000 when the national governors were here. And Governor Ridge couldn't have been any nicer or classier to deal with or work with, and liked him very, very much. Time now for this day in sports history. Then Dave Spadaro, who's now thoroughly bored by the story. 1939, first U.S. water ski tournament held at Jones Beach, naturally, in Long Island. 1939, this is the day that Joe Louis in Yankee Stadium knocked out Max Schmeling in 2 minutes and 4 seconds. 1979, former WHA teams, the Edmonton Oilers, Hartford Whalers, Quebec Nordiques, and the Winnipeg Jets joined the NHL as they expanded to 21 teams. They're about to go to 31 based on today's vote with Las Vegas coming up. The Edmonton Oilers are still very much in business. The Whalers are now the Carolina Hurricanes. The Nordiques are now the Colorado Avalanche. And the Winnipeg Jets are now the Arizona Coyotes. The Winnipeg Jets you see now used to be the Atlanta Thrashers. Eric Lindros, drafted by Quebec this date, 1991. Not going to sign. Nope. Ended up, of course, going to Philadelphia. All right, let's now shift gears and talk about the Eagles with Eagles insider Dave Spadaro. Dave, welcome. It is great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Steve. You've gone from the political spectrum to the NHL, and now here we are in the downtime of the NFL. I'm excited.
And there's no such thing as downtime in the NFL anymore, it seems, Dave, is there?
Right now, though, honestly, it is as dead as you can get. It is the down cycle. The only thing going on is that the Eagles just finished their rookie symposium. I mean, they are spread in all corners of the world right now, literally, until training camp starts. So if there is a downtime, welcome to it.
After the Chip Kelly era, how much surgery is needed to repair the patient?
Well, I actually think Howie Roseman, the executive vice president of football operations, really did a good job this offseason digging the Eagles out of what, when I initially kind of looked at the salary cap and the roster, and I said, man, this could take a couple years to get rid of some of these underperforming players, and really specifically referring to Byron Maxwell and DeMarco Murray, who were so disappointing last year. I really thought Howie did a bang-up job finding trade partners for both of those players and giving the Eagles an opportunity to have some flexibility within the salary cap to go out and be aggressive in free agency, which they were. So I really like this offseason. I think they're kind of right back on track. I, the defense, bringing in Jim Schwartz to me was just a huge move.
Yep.
Just a very, very important move. I think the defense is in really good hands, and I get what they've tried to do here with the quarterback position, with the present and the future all accounted for, they hope.
Right. So let's get to the obviously the quarterback's always going to be the big one. Just based on football IQ and skill set, what are some areas pro and con about Carson Wentz, at least initially?
I can tell you, and I read everything that everybody writes, and I'm standing next to these reporters, but I'm going to tell you that what the Eagles coaching staff, and I really respect Frank Reich and John DeFilippo and Doug mm-hmm. Peterson, who all of whom have played the position. So there's really very little downside. Okay, he's thrown an interception or two. Sometimes he doesn't set his feet and the pass comes out a little wobbly. But he's pretty much off the charts in everything else. Now, this is in the course of just looking at a developmental quarterback. I mean, then I look at Carson and I look at the way he's handled the media, handled the locker room, handled the building, handled the fans, the intensity of the city. I just think he's off to a wonderful start. I can't wait to see him when the pads go on and the defense can really, really challenge, and then the preseason games come along. I watched Donovan McNabb at the same stage, and, you know, you saw this raw talent, this guy with this rocket arm, and even though he had played 4 years at Syracuse, I just think Carson has he's just kind of got it, and I really feel very much like Carson is ahead of where Donovan was at this early stage in his career. That said, the plan is to not play Carson Wentz this year, that he is going to sit and watch and learn and practice and get stronger and get the mental reps, and that Sam Bradford is the quarterback. And I really believe that that is the big picture intention. So right now, everybody really thrilled with what Carson, you know, other than getting locked in a bathroom at a New Jersey rest stop, and tweeting about it, which may have been worse. You know, because we've all been there, right? We've all been in that panic situation. Otherwise, the kid really he is so impressive in every way.
Sam Bradford got a 2-year deal out of it. Was not a winner in the offseason, how he handled it. But did you see some changes in him in terms of his understanding of how everything fits?
Yeah, you know, Steve, I think everybody was really disappointed to see him leave for those 2 weeks. And I'll tell you this, since he's come back, he's been different. He's been more assertive. His play on the field has been exemplary. He really has had – he is eons ahead of where he was last year, of course. At this time last year, he hadn't even taken an 11-on-11 rep. This year, he didn't miss any reps. He didn't miss any days. He's stronger physically. I think those 2 weeks cleared his mind. I think he understands the task in front of him and the responsibility and the opportunity, really, because if he has a good season, and why not? Why wouldn't he? I mean, the offense is stronger up front. It's a good scheme. They've got good coaching. There's certainly legitimate question marks about the wide receivers and about the running backs, but I think Sam has stepped up since he's come back.
What do you see, Dave, as the pecking order at wideout, and what do you see as the potential pecking order at running back to try and give them the best shot and the tools around Sam Bradford?
Yeah, running back, I don't think there's going to be a workhorse running back. I just don't think that's Ryan Matthews' DNA. You know, the concerns about his injury history, I mean, the facts are the facts, and they are merited, and I think he'll get a lot of touches. Hopefully he stays healthy. I think they want the kid Wendell Smallwood to work his way in there very quickly. They really like how he's come along. Kenyon Barner is going to be a contributor. Darren Sproles, I would hope, gets the football more in the passing game than he did the last couple of seasons when he had 40 and 51 catches. After three straight plus 70 catch seasons in New Orleans. So I think it's going to be very similar to what Doug Peterson had last year after Jamaal Charles was injured in Kansas City. They rotated their backs. They went with the hot guy. They mixed the touches in, and then they ran the ball effectively. Wide receiver, look, I'm waiting for somebody to really step up. I mean, it is certainly an area where you go, wow, there's no, like, superstar here. There's no true number one. I think Jordan Matthews will be productive inside. His challenge is that in this offense, they want you to be a very sudden route runner, in and out of your cuts quickly. That's not necessarily him, but he works so hard. He's so tough. He'll be productive. You know, Reuben Randall has a chance to resurrect his career, and he wanted to go into free agency and make $80 million and have a 5-year contract. Didn't happen. 1-year deal. So here's your chance, Reuben. And then Josh Huff, if they can get him to be more consistent, they'll run him crossing route after crossing route after crossing route. And I think they think he had a good spring, even though some of the reporters, I believe, inaccurately depicted his offseason as not very productive. And then there's Nelson Agholor, who, look, we all know what happened once camp ended. Nothing has been updated there. The investigation continues. Nelson clearly has to perform. not only because of that, obviously, but he came off a disappointing rookie season. So he'll come back to training camp, and there's going to be some pressure on Nelson Agholor.
It's interesting because this is not a workhorse back league any longer. I mean, it really has transitioned from that. And I'll tell you right now, a guy that will tell you that Darren Sproles needs to touch it 70-plus times, if Jack Ham has said it to me once, he has said it probably to me 15, 20 times the last 2 years, that he needs touches in the open field.
Yeah, that was all of these pieces of evidence about Chip Kelly and the offense, and he's a genius, and he's got this Swiss Army knife in Darren Sproles. And you know, the remarkable thing was that Darren didn't get the ball that much in the open field. He was probably more effective as a running back than we thought. But I mean, my goodness, you know, where were all the receptors? Where were the matchups? Where were the mismatches? Where was moving Sproles around in the formation? I think this scheme is more reliant upon that. So, I you know, the way they used to use Westbrook and Brian Westbrook and move him around, wide receiver here and slot back there and running back on the next play, I think that's what you're going to see with Darren Sproles. And that's going to open things up for Zach Ertz and for Reuben Randall and for the, you know, not star power group that the Eagles have at wide receiver.
Now, Chip didn't always play fast, but there are moments he wanted to play fast. Is Doug Peterson's style, which is more traditional in the NFL realm, actually going to be beneficial for the defense in attempting to keep them off the field a little bit longer?
I think it's going to be beneficial for players like Jason Peters on the offense and the offensive line who got worn down, and a team that really, the defense was on the field too long. I mean, the last two seasons, my goodness, the Eagles were sitting pretty at the start of December in 2014, a 9-3 record. They stink up the joint, lose three of their last four games. They struggled late in the season last year as well. I believe that's a product of being worn down. I believe that's a product of being not having the discipline that you build up in training camp. So I think it will help. I really do think it will help.
Yeah, because I think one of the bigger things that rarely talked about is that you play offense to what your defense is, and you play defense to what your offense is. And if you don't do that, you do get in trouble.
Yeah, Steve, it was. I'll go back to Chip. I thought the first year, his style took everybody by storm in the league, right? And then as you know, in the game of football, there's a lot of smart coordinators out there, and they're sitting there going, all right, how can we slow this down? How can we stop? Boy, what is this offense all about? So then you wait for the next trick up his sleeve, and there really was no next trick up the sleeve. The Eagles kind of still did the same thing, and the league caught on to it. And I think really I think there's talent here. I think the defense with Jim Schwartz, I mean, it's a proven scheme. The players really seem excited about it, about attacking the football. The offensive line seems much more excited, and Jason Peters, I'll use him as an example, didn't miss a practice all spring, looks great, ready to go, feels rejuvenated. They've built up the offensive line again. They want to play some power football. So let's hope it's what the Eagles wanted, to build some stability here after 3 years of, you know, at times a lot of fun, but at the end, a disappointing no playoff victories in three seasons. So, I mean, everything they've done here is designed to compete this year, and they've added, you know, four or five starters in free agency. And then moving up in the draft to get Carson Wentz gives them a quarterback that they think they can build around for the next, you know, 10 or 12 years.
One final question, Dave, then I'll let you go, and that deals with Doug Peterson. First time around as a head coach. We'll obviously be able to see week by week as to how he handles game situations and so forth, because everybody will do their weekly report card. But at least initially, what kind of organizer does he seem to be? What kind of handle does he have on the position, at least at this stage?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think that's the big question with Doug. I mean, I think his message has been heard by the players. I think, look, the evidence is how Sam Bradford responded after his 2 weeks, how Fletcher Cox responded by coming to the camp, the mandatory camp, as a prelude to signing his mega contract. Darren Sproles, same thing. I feel like he surrounded himself with some veteran presence in Schwartz, on defense. I mean, Doug does not have to worry about the defense. That's huge. And Frank Reich has been in the league for 25 years. As an offensive coordinator, that's really important for Doug. So I think he knows he doesn't know everything. He's willing to listen. He's been really accessible and I think really congenial and refreshing with the media. So I think he's off to a good start. Now, game situations, you know, third and two, late in the fourth quarter, what's the call going to be? What's that two-minute drill going to look like when the Eagles are hurrying to play catch-up? You know, those are the questions that we can't answer until the season starts. And those are really the questions that everybody wants answers to. But my feeling is that I think everybody's pretty pleased with what Doug has said to the team, how the team has responded, and how organized they have been at practice and the training camp. I mean, it's a chip off the old Andy Reid block. And I think everybody kind of welcomed that back after 3 years of relative chaos.
Dave, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for carving out the time for us. We really appreciate it.
Anytime, Steve. Thank you so much.
Dave Spadaro, Eagles insider. Jerry Dulac, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, coming up in the next half hour. We will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Jerry Dulac, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, next half hour. We're going to talk about the Steelers and the U.S. Open. Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated, final half hour. Thanks to Dave Spadaro, Eagles insider, for joining us on the show today. We will not have a show tomorrow. We will then bounce right back with a show on Friday. And then next week, we start inching our way toward the 4th of July. Wow. Wow. Okay, here's, let's have a little fun here with some baseball rules. All right, some baseball myths. Okay, number one, the hands are considered part of the bat. No, an umpire must judge if the ball hit the bat or the batter first. A hitch in the hand doesn't hit the bat. You're hit by a pitch. The batter runner must turn right after overrunning the base. The batter runner must make an attempt to advance to second in order for him to be liable to be tagged out. If the batter breaks his wrist when he swings, it's a strike. Some consider this to be a criterion, but it's not necessary. But it is considered to be, for many, a criterion. They broke the wrist, thus they did go around. If a batted ball hits the plate, it's a foul ball. To rule it foul, the ball has to come to rest or be touched in foul territory. A batter cannot be called out for interference if he is in the batter's box. No, if you cause interference, it's interference. The ball is dead on a foul tip. The ball is always live on a foul tip. Therefore, runners may be put out or advance at their own risk at a foul tip. You can steal a base at a foul tip if you want. You know, you foul tip one into the mitt on strike two, and the guy's running. He can steal the bag. The batter may not switch batter's boxes after two strikes. You can switch a box anytime when the ball is dead. A batter who bats out of order is the person to clear it out. No, it is the person that was supposed to bat that is declared out. Batter may not overrun first base when he gets a base on balls. You can do that. National Federation, you can't, but NCAA or minor or professional baseball, you can. The batter is out if he starts for the dugout before going to first after a drop third strike. The batter is out if he leaves the dirt circle around the plate area after a drop third strike unless he is making an attempt to reach first base. We have more of these. We'll slip in as the show goes. We have word that the suit has now made his way back and that the undisclosed ruse that Sean and I put together, the undisclosed location ruse, worked.